I read a headline at the end of November, which was "New attacks endanger Bluetooth data security on billions of devices." And my first thought when I read it was, can it be patched? Is it patched already? Daniele Antonioli is the guy that researched these attacks and named them bluffs. The attack bluffs several security mechanisms and uses six novel attacks to break the Bluetooth security. Daniele works as an assistant professor at Eurocom with the Software and Systems Security Group, and I'm excited to see how he breaks and fixes Bluetooth. So let's unlock the stage and give him a warm round of applause, and let's hear what he does. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for the kind introduction, and good evening to everybody, and thanks for coming to my talk. I would also to extend my greetings to the people who are attending the talk remotely. And this talk is titled Bluffs, Bluetooth Forward and Future Secrecy Attacks and Defenses. My name is Daniele Antonioli. I'm an assistant professor at Eurocom, a university located in the French Riviera. We are doing research in applied system security and privacy on topics including wireless security, embedded system security, and mobile system security. We are hiring PhD and postdocs, so if you are interested in what we are doing, please talk to me later, or you can also send me an email, and you can check out my personal website for more information about my research. This talk is based on a research paper that I presented recently at ACM CCS, and you can find more information about the talk, of course, in the paper. And the talk also contributes to a research project called ORSHIN. ORSHIN stands for Open Source Resilient Hardware and Software for the Internet of Things. I'm the technical lead of this research project that is funded by the European Union. You can also check out the webpage of ORSHIN if you are interested. Okay, so now let's start with some introduction about Bluetooth and its security mechanisms. So Bluetooth is a pervasive, low-power wireless technology. It is specified in a set of documents that are publicly available. The most important document is the Bluetooth Core document, which is a PDF, 3,000 pages long PDF. The latest version of the core specification is 5.4. Inside this document, you will see two main Bluetooth flavors specified. The first one is Bluetooth Classic, which is shortened with BC and color-coded in blue. And Bluetooth Classic is used for high throughput and connection-oriented wireless services. Think headsets connected to a laptop. Then there is a second transport called Bluetooth Low Energy, BLE in short, which is color-coded in light blue, that was specified to address the IoT market. And so here we are talking about connection-less wireless services or connection-oriented wireless services with low throughput, but very low power consumption. For example, if you have a fitness tracker, you can connect it to your smartphone using Bluetooth Low Energy. And maybe the most important keyword about Bluetooth is interoperable, because Bluetooth is trying to address as many as wireless services and wireless devices as possible. In fact, it is used by billions of heterogeneous devices. All our smartphones, laptops, cars, wearables, even industrial sensors, and biomedical devices are using Bluetooth. And this entails a really large attack surface. If you manage to break Bluetooth, then you can break all these devices. A bit of historical context about Bluetooth. So Bluetooth, the name of Bluetooth comes from the name of King Harald Bluetooth, which was a Danish king who united several tribes into a single kingdom. And Bluetooth is trying to do the same thing for wireless communication. So it's trying to unite all wireless devices to speak the same protocol. Another bit of history is about the logo of Bluetooth. The Bluetooth logo is the superposition of the king initials using the Nordic alphabet. And so we have Nordic H superposed with the Nordic B, because the name of the king was Harald Bluetooth. And this forms the logo that everybody knows. Bluetooth is specified in a set of documents, and the official Bluetooth website is defining the Bluetooth specification as a set of technologies to create interoperable Bluetooth devices. Inside the specification, we found the definition of the transports that I already mentioned, like BC and BLE. We also find the definition of the components that you will have to implement if you want a Bluetooth device. So we have the host component that typically is implemented in the operating system of a device. Think of it as the Linux kernel. And then we have the controller component, which is implemented in the system on chip, the radio system on chip firmware. And these two components are talking using a protocol called HCI, the host controller interface. And then, of course, the Bluetooth specification is also describing the security protocols used by all Bluetooth devices. And there are two main protocols. One is pairing, and the second one is session establishment. And in this talk, we will focus on session establishment. Now, one message that I always would like to convey whenever I talk about Bluetooth security is that one vulnerability in the Bluetooth specification is exploitable on billions of devices. And so it is critical that the security protocols in the Bluetooth specification are robust against attacks. In the past, we discovered several vulnerabilities and attacks at the specification level. For example, in 2021, we talk about the blur attacks, where we are capable of attacking Bluetooth Classic from Bluetooth Low Energy and vice versa by exploiting a feature in the standard called cross-transport key derivation. In 2020, we developed the bias attacks, which are authentication bypasses tricks that you can play for Bluetooth Classic. And in 2019, we talk about the knob attacks, which are key downgrade attacks on Bluetooth Classic and Bluetooth Low Energy. And today we will talk about yet a novel family of attacks and vulnerabilities affecting the Bluetooth specification. So keep in mind this message. One BT specification vulnerabilities, billions of exploitable devices. Now, before talking about the attack, we have to describe on a high level what are these security protocols used by Bluetooth. So the first one is pairing. Pairing is a key agreement protocol that is used to derive a long-term key, also called pairing key. And in case of Bluetooth Low Energy, during this protocol, you can set the strength of this pairing key, also known as the entropy of the pairing key. The default entropy value is 16 bytes. You can think of the entropy as the key length. So you have a length. The higher the length, the stronger the key. And so 16 bytes is the default value. And then you can lower this value as low as 7 bytes. Pairing is optional authenticated, and authentication requires user interaction. That is why, for example, when you want to pair your new smartphone with your laptop, sometimes you are required to confirm that you see the same numeric value on the screens of the laptop and the smartphone. This is a way to authenticate pairing against man-in-the-middle attacks. Then there is session establishment, which is a protocol that is used by paired devices whenever they connect. This protocol requires no user interaction, and it is used to secure the communications of all Bluetooth connections. This protocol derives a session key. This session key is fresh, meaning that each session is using a new session key. And for Bluetooth Classic, the strength of the session key can be negotiated. So you can have session keys of 16 bytes, with 16 bytes of entropy, and session keys with 7 bytes of entropy, for example. And how do you derive this session key? You use a key derivation function that takes as input the long-term pairing key and some runtime parameters. Then you have security modes. These are negotiable. At the beginning of the pairing and the session establishment protocols, the devices are negotiating a security mode. That is either secure connections, or SC, or legacy secure connection, or LSC. SC is using FIPS compliant cryptographic primitives such as elliptic Kurdi Fjellman, AES in CCM mode, and HKDF key derivation function, SHA-256, and so on and so forth. LSE instead is using weaker legacy cryptographic primitives such as the E0 stream cipher that was an AES candidate and the Safer Plus cipher. Now, this talk is about forward and future secrecy. These are two essential security properties. Forward secrecy protects past session against the key compromised in the present. Okay? So how can we implement forward secrecy? We can derive a session key using a secure key derivation function, such as HKDF, and we put as input of the HKDF a constant and a key used in the past, such that an attacker who compromises the key in the present, the key in red in the slide, cannot compute the key in the past, because it was securely derived with a key derivation function. Okay, so we protect past session from compromises in the present. Future secrecy is similar, but it protects future sessions against key compromise in the present. How can we implement future secrecy? We can use the same key derivation function, but now as input we put the key, the present key, and some fresh randomness. This fresh randomness, for example, can be generated using Diffie-Hellman. With Diffie-Hellman, you do the standard Diffie-Hellman, you have a shared secret at the end of Diffie-Hellman, and you put this new randomness in the HKDF, you derive a key for the future. Now, if I'm the attacker and I'm compromising the key in the present, I cannot compute the key in the future, because I don't know these new random numbers that were generated. And the future secrecy is also called self-healing, because it sort of self-heal a session that is weak in the present but will become stronger in the future. Okay? Now, the key question that we asked is, what are the forward and future secrecy guarantee of the Bluetooth standard? And surprisingly, we noticed that these properties are not even discussed in the Bluetooth standard. And also, there were no prior evaluations in academia and industry about the Bluetooth forward and future secrecy, despite their widespread use in the real world, right? For example, the latest version of TLS, TLS 1.3, is mandating forward secret cryptographic primitives. Or Signal, the messaging app, is using the double ratchet algorithm, which provides forward and future secrecy. Okay? And so we fill this research gap with this analysis. And in particular, we present the first study of Bluetooth forward and future secrecy. We uncover two new vulnerabilities in the session key derivation protocol of Bluetooth Classic. So here we are narrowing down the scope to Bluetooth Classic and session establishment of Bluetooth Classic. If you remember, there are two transport, BLE and BC, two security protocols, pairing and session establishment. We narrow down to Bluetooth Classic session establishment. Based on these two vulnerabilities, we develop six new attacks called the Bluffs attacks that are breaking Bluetooth Classic forward and future secrecy. And then we run a large-scale evaluation where we exploited 18 popular devices using 17 different Bluetooth chips, and all these devices are vulnerable to the attacks that we will present later, and this will represent a lower bound of the exploitability of the Bluffs attacks, because we cannot really test all Bluetooth devices, but if we break the Bluetooth standard, we are confident that we can break all devices implementing this protocol. Then we also fix the attacks with a compliant and practical key derivation protocol that we proposed to the Bluetooth Special Interest Group. We reported our findings, including the countermeasures, to the Bluetooth SIG Special Interest Group. This is a consortium of companies that is managing the Bluetooth standard, is managing responsible disclosure. So whenever you find a vulnerability affecting the Bluetooth standard, you should contact first the Bluetooth SIG, and then you can also contact the affected vendors. We got CVE, so you can track the Bluffs attacks with this CVE. And we also released a toolkit on GitHub that you can use to reproduce the attacks and to detect them statically from some pickup files, from some traffic. So now we've seen the basics, the introduction. Now let's dive into the attacks. Whenever we talk about attacks, we need to define a threat model. We need to specify what is the system that we want to protect, what is the attacker that is attacking the system. But defining a threat model for the bluffs attacks was not straightforward because forward and future secrecy were not discussed in the standard. So we had to study the standard, formalize a bit the forward and future secrecy, and come up with a threat model. And so the security property is the following. Bluetooth Classic should provide forward and future secrecy among sessions. Here we are not talking about among messages, like in Signal, for example. We are talking about sessions. As long as the long-term pairing key is not compromised, otherwise the attacker can derive all the session keys. And as long as the key derivation function used to compute the session key is not vulnerable. Otherwise, the attacker can compute the session key. And we will see that with the bluffs attacks, we are violating this security property. Now, in our threat model, we have Alice and Bob. Alice is the central, the connection initiator. Bob is the peripheral, the connection responder. Alice and Bob, they already paired. They share a pairing key. The attacker is not observing the pairing process. And Alice and Bob can support legacy secure connections or secure connections. This is needed because we want to cover all possible attack scenarios for Bluetooth Classic. Then we assume an attacker called Charlie, which is a proximity-based attacker. So it is an attacker in proximity with some Bluetooth device who cannot compromise the pairing key and who cannot compromise all the session key that is targeting. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense to study forward and future secrecy. And the goal is to break forward and future secrecy. And if you achieve this goal, you entail novel impacts for Bluetooth, because no one studied this goal before. And as a result, you, for example, will be able to man in the middle secure connections in the past, in the present, and in the future. And you will be able also to impersonate devices. For example, you can impersonate Alice to Bob and Bob to Alice. Okay, so given this threat model, this is the attack timeline. Here we are using discrete time events because it is important to discretize time because we want to keep track of what is the past, what is the present, and what is the future. We assume that at time T0, Alice and Bob, they establish the pairing key. So they pair, the attacker is not there. Then at time T1, Charlie uses some novel tricks to force a weak session key called SKC. And also, Charlie is capable of saving all the parameters that were used to negotiate this session key. And then Charlie starts sniffing the sessions that are using this session key. And here already we see that we found a way to reuse a session key across multiple sessions. Then at time T2, Charlie brute forces SKC. It is capable of brute forcing it because it is weak. And by doing that, Charlie breaks all the sessions between T1 and T2. And this corresponds to a break in the forward secrecy of Bluetooth, because Charlie is capable of computing past messages with a key compromise. But the attack does not end here, because at time T3, that might coincide with time T2, Charlie can also start to reforce SKC in the future. And Charlie, by doing that, Charlie breaks future secrecy. Okay? And then, as an extra step, Charlie celebrates. Celebrates. Why? Because Charlie managed one more time to break the Bluetooth standard, despite all the fixes and countermeasures, okay? And just for a bit of fun, we have a Daft Punk detour with one slide where we explain so that Daft Punk is a French electronic music duo, so I'm based in France, and I listen to good French music. They formed in Paris in 1993, and one interesting thing about Daft Punk is that their music is combining multiple genres. And in the bluffs attacks, we are combining multiple tricks. New tricks, but also old tricks. And another important thing is that Daft Punk were negatively seen by conservative music reviewers, but they proved themselves to be new and relevant to the music scene, international music scene. And with the Bluffs attacks, we experienced something similar from academic reviewers. And there are also other off-the-wall efforts in the academic scene that sometimes suffer from, not being well received because maybe the content of the paper, I don't know, it's too technical or is too applied. But we should keep pushing, publishing research papers that are also interesting for the hacking community. And so I would like also to thank CCC for organizing this set of talks because they're really interesting and are really useful for us as academics because we can spread the word about our research work to a much broader community. Thank you. And by the way, the GIF that I put is as far as I can get with animations is in my slides, so sorry about that. This is the best that I can do with memes and animations. Now, go back to the attacks. So now we will see in detail what is the attack technique, how Charlie is playing these tricks to break forward and future secrecy. So at time T1, if you remember, Charlie wants to force a weak SKC, save the key derivation parameters, and start sniffing the communication. How can he do that? Well, Charlie can mount a man-in-the-middle attack. And in the first two messages of session establishment, Alice and Bob are exchanging some values, including the security mode. And Charlie can force LSC. So even if Alice is supporting SC, Charlie can manipulate this message because these messages are not integrity protected. They are not encrypted. These are sent in clear. And so Charlie can play an old trick and downgrade the session establishment protocol to LSC. Then Charlie can relay the authentication challenge that is sent by Alice to Bob to authenticate the pairing key. Remember that Charlie doesn't know the pairing key, but also doesn't care about these messages because she can simply relay them between Alice and Bob. So Alice is sending an authentication challenge, AC. Bob is sending back a challenge response, which is computed from the pairing key, and that is good. Now, Charlie plays, again, an old trick that is the knob attack because it downgrades the entropy of the session key to 7 bytes. This is the lowest but yet standard compliant value possible, okay? And by Charlie can change this entropy value from 16 to 7, again, because the protocol is not integrity protected. Then Alice is sending something called SD, or a session key diversifier. This should protect against our attack because it should be used to generate a different session key for each session, okay? This value is just observed by Charlie, and it is relayed to Bob, to the peripheral, and then after this message is sent, Alice and Bob, they are using the LSC key derivation function that takes as input the pairing key, the Bluetooth address of Bob, the authentication challenge, the entropy value, and the session diversifier, and it is outputting SKC. Okay, so at this point in time, Charlie is only saving the parameters needed to compute this key. But Charlie doesn't know SKC, Charlie doesn't know the pairing key. Okay? And then Alice and Bob, they start sending messages encrypted messages, and these messages are encrypted with SKC. Charlie sniffs these messages and start mounting a brute force attack against SKC. After some time, at time T2, Charlie brute forces SKC. Why is this possible? Because crypto system with 7 bytes of entropy are not adequate in 2023. We broke similar crypto systems such as DES, the data encryption standard, multiple times with increasing level of performances. For example, the Electronic Frontier Foundation developed a specialized hardware called DeepCrack, and then they were able to crack DES. An academic group also developed some dedicated hardware to crack DES called Copacabana. And on average, to break a crypto system with 7 bytes of entropy, you need 2 to the 55 trials because of the Birthday paradox theorem. And if you look at the recommended key lengths in 2023, for example, you visit the keylength.com, which is a reputable website providing recommendations about this thing, you see that the minimum in 2023 should be 84 bits. And key length is recommended was recommending 56 bits in 1982, right? And I think that this brute force attack is doable in weeks with a low cost setup, but with dedicated hardware, you maybe do it in days and even hours. There is also a degenerate case where the attacker can actually downgrade the entropy of the session key to 1 byte, perform the original knob attack, and now you are left with a key space of 256 keys. And now you can try the brute force attack with pen and paper, and you will succeed. You will not even need a script to brute force a key with 1 byte of entropy. Okay? Okay, so now we brute force the key, we broke forward secrecy, and now we can start doing extra attacks on future sessions. Now we can, for example, impersonate Alice to Bob at T3. How can we do that? We can present to Bob with the Bluetooth address of Alice. We can downgrade the session establishment protocol to LSC. We can replay the old authentication challenge that we saved at time T1. We can ignore the challenge response that we get back from Bob. We can redo the knob attack and force the old entropy value of 7 bytes. We can send the old session key diversifier SD. And now, voila, we know SKC, and we force Bob to recompute SKC. And now we can send messages as Alice to Bob. Okay? But we can also impersonate Bob to Alice. This attack is very similar to the one that I showed before, but the difference here is that whenever we impersonate Bob, we are supposed to be the peripheral. So we are not the connection initiator. The connection is initiated by Alice, but we can play a trick to switch the connection role before the authentication protocol starts. In fact, if you see the third message before sending the old AC, we send a role switch message. This role switch message is a really nice trick because it enables not only to switch connection roles, so after that message, Charlie becomes the central and Alice becomes the peripheral, but as a side effect, it also switches authentication roles. So now Charlie, even if it was the peripheral, does not have to authenticate the pairing key. And this is a trick that we discovered with the bias attacks. Then we redo the knob attack, and then we force SKC. Then we can also combine the two impersonation attacks, and we can man in the middle future sessions by reinstalling SKC. I stress out that the bluff attacks are not only a man in the middle attack, but you can also impersonate a device. It is completely different. So I can, for example, approach, I don't know, a car as a trusted smartphone. Or I can impersonate a car to a smartphone. It's not only a matter of man in the middling someone. The attacker does not require always to be in proximity of the two victims, just one victim. Okay? Now, you can combine these attack strategies and come up with 6 attacks. These are the labels that we also use in the research paper, A1, A2, A3, A4, A5, and A6. These labels are covering the whole attack surface, and they differentiate between themselves according to the device that is spoofed. So either you spoof a central or a peripheral, or you man in the middle them, and also the security mode. So if you do the math, you get 6 attacks, and I'm also annotating the labels with the time instant where you can do the attacks. For example, the man-in-the-middle attacks can be performed also at time T1, the other attacks at time T3. Okay, so now, what are the vulnerabilities? What are the root causes of the bluff attacks? Here I'm reusing one of the message sequence chart of an attack to explain what are the root causes. We have four root causes. In the paper, they're indicated with RC1, RC2, RC3, and RC4. First two are new, so they were unknown before the release of this research work. Instead, the other two were known. So if we go from top to bottom, the first one is RC4. RC4 is a vulnerability related to the fact that SC can be downgraded to LSC. This is the first vulnerability. The second vulnerability is the fact that the session key diversifiers, so all these values that are used to compute SKC as input to the KDF, they are not integrity protected. If you are not integrity protecting a message, then an attacker can tamper with this message, okay? Then we have RC1, which is a vulnerability related to the fact that the KDF, when you are using LSC, the key derivation function, is unilateral. This means that one device can dictate all the parameters that will be used to derive a session key. And that device, of course, can be the attacker. RSC2 is the second novel vulnerability and is related to the fact that KDF is not mandating the usage of nonces. This means that an attacker can replay old value. Instead, with a nonce, you should use a different number. The number can be random, can be a counter, but should be different for each session. Instead, the Bluetooth specification is not mandating the usage of nonces and is specifying a key derivation function that is not mutual, but is unilateral. And this is in this table, we see a mapping between the root causes and the attacks. And pretty much all attacks are exploiting all root causes, with the exception of A1, A2, and E3 that are not exploiting RC4, because in this attack we are targeting LSC victims. And so we don't have to downgrade a session to legacy secure connection, because the victims are not supporting secure connections. Okay, so now we run a large-scale evaluation of the bluff attacks. This is a table that summarizes all the devices that we exploited. The first column, we have the chip that is used by a device. Second column, the device name. Third column, the Bluetooth version. And then we have one column, dedicated column, for each of the attacks, okay? I'm boxing in orange the victims that are supporting only LSC, and in red the victims that are supporting secure connection. Now, some key takeaways about our evaluation. So for LSC victims, all devices are vulnerable, except a pair of Logitech Boom 3 speaker, which, surprisingly, despite being not fancy device, they are not vulnerable against two of the six attacks, because they require pairing key authentication even if we do this the role switch trick. If you remember, we have to do the role switch trick, but the device is requiring central authentication. Another interesting insight is that the Google Pixel Buds E-series that are quite recent, they still accept the full entropy downgrade. And so they are still vulnerable to original NOB attack with 1 byte of entropy. I reported this vulnerability to Google, and they answered with a no fix message. So the Google Pixel Buds E-series will be vulnerable forever to the original NOB attack. So I should keep a pair of these earbuds on my desk, as a reminder. For secure connection, all devices are vulnerable if the other victim is supporting legacy secure connection. Instead, 8 devices are not vulnerable to A4, A5, and A6 because they do something smart. They enforce secure connection between pairing and session establishment. There is no reason why two devices who are supporting secure connection use secure connection during pairing, and they start using legacy secure connection after pairing. And so if you keep track of the capabilities of the devices that you pair with, then you can enforce this mode. without breaking the connection. The bluff attacks impact billions of Bluetooth devices because we exploit several of them, laptops, smartphones, tablets, headsets. We target several operating systems, iOS, Android, Linux, Windows, proprietary operating systems. We exploit different software implementation of Bluetooth, including Linux, BlueZ, GabbleDorsh, that is the Android Rust stack, BlueDroid, that is still an Android Bluetooth stack that is the prior to GabbleDorsh, and also proprietary software stacks. We support different hardware manufacturers, including Intel, Broadcom, Logitech, Infineon, Qualcomm, Apple, Microsoft, and Cambridge Silicon Radio, and the list goes on and on. We exploit the most used Bluetooth versions, the most popular Bluetooth version, 5.2, 5.1, 5.0, 4.2, 4.1, and so on. I could not test versions lower than 4.1, but these devices should also be vulnerable, unlike stated in some blog posts that I read. And again, this slide goes back to the main message at the beginning of the presentation. One, vulnerability, billions of exploitable devices. Okay, so now, how did we test these devices? Well, the testing Bluetooth Classic is not straightforward. So we had to develop a dedicated toolkit that supports several features. It is capable of performing the attacks using an attack device module. It is capable of detecting the attacks from a pickup file. It provides some sample pickup files that you can use as a reference to check if the attack that you are testing is successful or not. You can also use it to tamper with session key derivation in general, so you can play with all the parameters to force weak session keys, and maybe you can extend the toolkit to develop new attacks. Who knows? You can also monitor session keys across session to check effectively that the same session key is established over time, and the toolkit is low cost because it depends on a Linux laptop and a Bluetooth development board. The repository is already on GitHub, and you can have a look at the repository, you can clone it, you can fork it, you can do whatever you want with it. So I will not have time, unfortunately, to talk about all the implementation details, but I'm focusing on the attack device because I think it's the most interesting. So the attack device has this high-level scheme. You have a Linux laptop that is connected over USB with a Cypress development board. The Linux laptop is implementing the Bluetooth host, and you have a kernel space component in the Linux kernel, and then you have a user space component that is implemented by BlueZ. Then you have an HCI protocol running on USB used to communicate messages between the host and the controller. The controller is implemented in the development board Bluetooth firmware. That also includes a baseband module that is providing the real-time code to send messages, receive messages, and manage the link layer. The Linux laptop kernel is modified to parse diagnostic messages that are sent by the dev board. And so before starting the attack, you have to attach to the dev board with the BT attach command, and then you have to send a vendor-specific HCI command. There is a script for that in the repository that is activated diagnostic mode. This is really important because typically, whatever you see on Wireshark whenever you are capturing Bluetooth packets is at the HCI level. You are just seeing the internal messages that are exchanged between the host and the controller. You are not seeing the link layer messages that are exchanged over the air. By activating diagnostic mode, you get these messages mirrored on the HCI interface, and so Wireshark will show at the same time HCI packet, but also link layer packets. Then we had to work quite hard on the Bluetooth firmware of the Cypress board, because the thing with Bluetooth Classic is that the pairing and session establishment and all the crypto stuff are implemented at the firmware level in the controller. And as far as I know, there is no open source Bluetooth controller. So if you know an open source Bluetooth Classic controller, please come to me and we can chat about it, because I would be really interested to play with that firmware. But in my case, I had to reverse engineer this firmware. Luckily, the symbols are available, but we spent quite a lot of time statically reverse engineer the firmware. And then we are using another vendor-specific command or set of commands to patch the firmware, to binary patch the firmware at runtime. And here we are taking advantage of an excellent tool that is called Internal Blue, which is a toolkit that provides a high-level Python API and a command line interface to patch the firmware of the dev board and also other firmwares easily. And we wrote several patches. I wrote several patches in ARM assembly. This is a table summarizing the patches. We have seven patches. For example, the first one is used to manipulate the authentication challenge. The second one to manipulate the challenge response. The third one is used to manipulate the session key diversifier. Then we have patches to read the value of the session key, because we want to monitor this value. We want to see SKC for all sessions. We can also read the entropy that was negotiated, if the attack device is a central or a peripheral. And then we can also disallow role switches. Now I'm just showing a quick example of a patch. This is man SD. This is a patch that is used to set the value of the session diversifier. So in the first instruction, we are setting R0 to zero. And then we are using R4 to, as the base address with a literal offset to set the SD value. And we have four instructions to set SD, because each instruction is setting 4 bytes. And SD is 16 bytes long. And then before jumping back to the original control flow, we have to execute the missed instruction, right? Because whenever you are, as we've seen with the prior talk on ARM more, whenever you are messing with binary patching, you have to restore the state of the firmware before jumping back to the execution, right? And so you have to execute all the missed instructions, and then you also have to restore the register values. And then you can jump back to the trigger address plus 5, because the firmware is using thumb mode, and in thumb mode you use odd addresses. To use thumb mode to compact a bit the size of the firmware. And the other patches are available on the repository. You can have a look at them. And you can develop new patches. You can patch the firmware with something new, and then you can test new attacks. How can you test the bluffs attacks with the toolkit? You have to connect the board to the laptop with BTattach. You have to activate diagnostic mode to get back the link layer packets. Then you can start Wireshark. And with Wireshark, you will see the HCI packets and also the LMP ones, which are the link layer packets that are interesting for us. Then you can pair a victim device with the attack device. Because you can use the attack device both as a victim and as the attacker. You can disconnect them, and then you run a script that is part of the repository that is called Bluffs. This script is automatically patching your dev board with all the patches needed to perform the attack, and then you can connect to the victim device that is under test. You can observe SKC. You can disconnect. Then you can redo a new connection, you establish a new session, you can reobserve SKC one more time, you can disconnect, and then you can repeat the last step until you are satisfied. You say, okay, I'm really satisfied. I've seen SKC 10 times, so I really broke forward and future secrecy. And by using this testing setup, you are automatically testing all the attacks that we develop, because we are covering the whole attack surface just with one script. Okay, so now we had to develop some countermeasures to address these critical problems. And we developed architectural, protocol-level countermeasures and implementation-specific ones. The protocol level is a design-level fix where we use authenticated and mutual session key derivation for LSE. And our countermeasure actually is backward compliant with the Bluetooth standard, so it can be integrated in the Bluetooth standard, and it is also low cost because it is reusing all the cryptographic primitives. It is just adding two extra messages or something like that to the protocol, and so it's not expensive as a countermeasure. We tested it at the protocol level because unfortunately we don't have access to an open source Bluetooth Classic firmware. But still, at the protocol level, the countermeasure is effective. And this is the new protocol that we developed. So in the first two messages, here we are narrowing down the scope to LSE because this is the protocol that we want to protect. We add an extra bit that is called AKD to negotiate this extended enhanced key derivation function to be backward compliant with devices who are not supporting this extended key derivation function. Then we run the authentication protocol of the pairing key. We run the entropy negotiation of the session key. And now we add an extra session diversifier. If you remember, in the original protocol, there is only one SD that is sent by the central to the peripheral. Now we add a diversifier that is also sent from the peripheral to the central. And so this results in a mutual key derivation protocol, plus we append a message authentication code to these two messages to certify the integrity of the message. Why can we do that? Because the devices are already paired, and so they already share a secret. If you share a secret, you can protect the integrity of a channel. And so we use the pairing key here. Or you can also derive some special integrity check key from the pairing key, and you can use that key to protect the integrity. And then you add one extra parameter to the key derivation function that now is called MKDF, because you are not only using the session diversifier from that you get from Alice, but you are also using the session diversifier from Bob. And this results in an authenticated, mutually derived session key. And if you implement this, you fix the attack at the root causes level, and this is very good. But we also proposed implementation level mitigations because we know that it's really hard to change the Bluetooth standard. And so we recommended vendors to enforce secure connections between pairing and session establishment. But this has a cons that this fix protects only secure connections to secure connection sessions. So if you implement this fix, you are maybe reducing the attack surface by 25%. Another fix is maintaining a cache of session diversifier. So in principle, a device could store the last 5 SD session diversifier that it has seen, and then see if someone is trying to reinstall the same key over time. But of course, as a drawback, the attacker is smart, is not dumb. And so the attacker can poison the cache and can invalidate this countermeasure. And then the third implementation level mitigation is to enforce mutual authentication of the pairing key always, regardless of the security mode. This is what is implemented, maybe by mistake, by the Boom Logitech speaker. But this, the main cons of this implementation level mitigation is the fact that it's not fixing the bluff's vulnerabilities. This is fixing a different vulnerability, and so if the attacker is bypassing this protocol, the pairing key authentication protocol in the session establishment, the attacker can still break forward and future secrets. Okay, so this is the last slide of my talk, and I'm happy to take questions. Thanks for attending the talk.
Daniele, thanks a lot. That was very interesting. So when you leave now, please do it quietly and please line up on the microphones for questions. Microphone 2.
Hi, yeah, okay. While reverse engineering the control of firmware, did you also find something about out about something the hardware registers? Because maybe having an open Bluetooth file would be really interesting. I mean, with Wi-Fi you have monitor mode, but with Bluetooth that doesn't really exist.
Well, no, not really. We didn't look into hardware registers, because whenever you are enabling this diagnostic mode, with this vendor-specific command, you are already getting something that looks like Wi-Fi monitor mode, and that was enough for us.
Thanks.
Microphone number one, please.
I have a curiosity on the root fix that you suggested. Isn't it true that if it's still like something that needs to be negotiated, can be still invalidated by the man-in-the-middle attack? So there is this unanswered key derivation. As long as I'm in the channel, I can still say no, the device does not support it.
Yeah, of course. But the problem with these fixes is that they should be compliant with the standard. And so you always have limitations. You cannot really propose something that is fully secure without breaking the standard. And so it's always a matter of trade-offs, right? Thank you for the question.
Okay, I think we stay with microphone one for another time.
Hi, can you use software-defined radio stack for this attack? And also, how do you mount a practical man-in-the-middle attack? You like jamming other devices, and how do you do it because of the channel hopping and all the stuff?
Yeah, so as far as I know, there are no SDR, open source SDR implementations that are covering the full Bluetooth stack. There are some old projects that are compatible with GNU Radio, but they just support, I think, Bluetooth Classic up to version 2.1 or something like that. So unfortunately, there are not that many efforts in the SDR space. For the second question, for the man-in-the-middle attack, well, you can use two development boards, attach them to the same laptop, and then you can wait until the devices are disconnecting, you can jam the channel. There are several tricks that you can play, but if you're patient, then you can mount the man-in-the-middle attack.
Thanks.
Let's get a question from the internet, please.
So the internet wants to know what is the intention behind the role switch? Are there any legit use cases for that?
Ah, well, that's a good question. I guess that one legitimate use case is whenever you have a connection with multiple devices, there is one central and multiple peripheral. Now, let's say that the central wants to leave the network, what is called the Piconet, the Bluetooth Piconet. Now, to synchronize devices, you always need at least one central. And in that case, someone should role switch to a central to keep the Piconet in sync. So that is one legitimate use case for role switching.
OK, let's take microphone number one, please.
Into the KDF, the Bluetooth address of Bob is an input. Would the attack still work if the Bluetooth address is random resolvable, as allowed by the standard?
Well, if the Bluetooth address is rotating, then you should keep track of the rotation of the Bluetooth address, and then you would have to break a new key. So that might mitigate some of the attack as a consequence of this resolvable private address. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
We go to microphone number four, please.
So why do we keep seeing protocol-related vulnerabilities? Can't we have a proper design process that provides proper assurance?
Well, yeah, this is a difficult one to answer. My personal opinion is that the ecosystem is so big and so complex that you have this legacy protocol that are biting, that are backfiring all the times. So even if you want to, let's say that now you want to develop the next generation Bluetooth security, you develop the perfect protocol that was, I know, is using the best primitives, is, I don't know, formally verified and so on and so forth. But then for legacy compliance reason, there should always be a way to go back to the old vulnerable protocols. And this is the trade-off, right? This is a trade-off for the interoperability of Bluetooth. So, yeah.
Yeah, microphone number one.
Yeah. Well, first, shortly, a recommendation on the Google Pixel Buds that you mentioned. I hope it was a joke, because maybe they're already compromised now, and you should put them in a soundproof box, because there might now be microphones on your desk. listening to you.
Yeah, maybe. On purpose.
Yeah, who knows? With key integrity of one, what was it? But my question is, you described this in theory, that you can do a man-in-the-middle attack with Charlie and Alice and Bob, but what's the likeliness of the theory in practice that Alice and Bob will stay around in your vicinity for so long that Charlie can actually validate his brute force attack? Because he needs to validate it, I mean, and then he needs to be close.
But the brute force attack can happen offline. You don't need an active connection, right?
Okay.
So you can brute force the key offline without needing physical proximity of Alice and Bob.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. You can take your time. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. You have time.
Microphone one, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the talk. It was certainly one of the better documented attacks in this Congress. So if I remember correctly, there was some criticism towards the Bluetooth SIG group in the beginning. What would be your advice to the SIG group? Like, since it's like a vulnerability in the protocol.
Yeah, so maybe I have some backup slides about this. So there was a Bluetooth SIG response that you can read, and there are some misconceptions in this response. Actually, there is a lot of jargon going on, as usual. And so here I try to collect the jargon versus the reality. For example, the Bluetooth SIG is saying that the blast attacks are affecting Bluetooth specification 4.2 through 5.4. But Bluetooth versions lower than 4.2 are also affected, and potentially also newer Bluetooth versions will be affected if they are not patching the blast attacks. Or the researchers identified that a man-in-the-middle attacker can do this and that, but we identified man-in-the-middle and spoofing attacks, right? So there are many, many tricks that the Bluetooth SIG is playing with this statement, and I guess that they should collaborate more with academic researchers. There are not that many people working on this protocol level attacks, but still we are a nice group of people and they should collaborate more with us.
Agree.
Thank you. So, again, microphone number one.
Hi, I have a question about the man-in-the-middle replay attack. So I assume Alice, Bob and the attacker are all in range. So if I replay, for example, to reduce the entropy, shouldn't Bob receive two messages with the entropy, one with the standard and one with seven? And how does Bob decide which message?
Because you have two separate channels. So whenever Alice wants to send something to Bob, it goes through Charlie. So Charlie is the man in the middle. So Charlie can modify that packet with 16 and can send the modified version to Bob, which with a value of seven. So it is not... Bob is not receiving two messages, just one.
And why is Bob? Because Bob is on a different channel.
Because there are two different link layer connections. So
okay.
Alice is connected to Charlie and thinks that she's talking to Bob, and vice versa. Bob is connected to Charlie and thinks that he's talking to Alice.
Okay, I see. Thank you.
Sure.
We have time for one more question. Microphone one, please.
Might be similar to a previous question, but. How are you ensuring that in your proposed solution you can't lower away this new feature flag?
Again, because you cannot. If you want to propose something that is compliant with the standard, you cannot mess up with the protocol. You can propose TLS if you want as an alternative, right? So there are many, many protocols. So we know how to secure channels, but whenever you want to patch a technology as complex as Bluetooth, you have to take into consideration this legacy stuff.
So doesn't it mean that even if you introduce that, it would still be vulnerable to the same issue?
It's not the same issue. It's a different issue.
Thank you, Daniele Antonioli. Again, a warm round of applause for Daniele.